Good afternoon. I'm Marty Morrissey, sitting in for Derek, and you're welcome to a special edition of Mooney. Because as Trinity College Dublin puts happiness under the microscope, today we make no apology for examining what it is that makes us smile.
Happiness, happiness, the greatest gift that I possess. I thank the Lord that I've been blessed with more than my share of happiness.
According to Wikipedia, happiness is a mental or emotional state of well-being characterized by positive or pleasant emotions ranging from contentment to intense joy.
Happiness is a cigar called Hamlet, the mild cigar from Benson and Hedges.
Ah, yes, happiness means many things to many people. Deep thinkers throughout the ages have had their own recipes for happiness.
Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. Dr. Seuss.
No medicine cures what happiness can't. Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
For every minute you are angry, you lose 60 seconds of happiness. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Count your life by smiles, not tears. John Lennon.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry. Be happy.
The most important thing is to enjoy your life, to be happy. It's all that matters. Audrey Hepburn. Happiness quite unshared can scarcely be called happiness. It has no taste. Charlotte Bronte.
Be happy. Don't worry. Be happy now.
It is of such fundamental importance to the human condition that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness were deemed to be inalienable rights by the United States Declaration of Independence.
Don't worry. Be happy.
It is a theme that's at the core of art, literature, and popular culture.
It is not in the nature of a dementor to be forgiving. But you know, happiness can be found even in the darkest of times. If one only remembers to turn on the light.
The Dalai Lama believes early affection is key to achieving happiness.
According to some scientists, after birth, next few weeks, simply mother's physical touch is immense sort of effect for proper development of child's brain. So similarly, we know those people who received maximum affection at early age, these people in deep insight, much happier.
Dalai Lama also said that happiness is not something ready-made. It comes from your own actions. So no matter what the weather, we might be wise to go by Dolly Parton's philosophy. Smile. It enhances your face value.
I'm singing in the rain. Just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again.
Abraham Lincoln said, folks are usually about as happy as they make their minds up to be. So maybe it's all down to looking on the bright side of life, staying positive and clinging to hope.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. It's all right. It's all right.
Yes, we're very happy here on the Mooney Show today, and we're happy to say that we have a happiness expert in studio for the duration of today's show. Nancy Etcoff is the Assistant Clinical Professor of Harvard Medical School in Massachusetts, if you don't mind. She just flew into Dublin this morning to be a speaker at Trinity College's Science of Happiness Week, which runs all of this week indeed. She may be a little jet-lagged, which I hope won't diminish her happiness. That's her laughing. We're on a roll here. If you have any questions for Nancy about happiness, you can text them to 51551 or email mooney@rte.ie or simply just tell us what makes you happy. So it's a happy programme. Nancy Etcoff, Dr. Nancy Etcoff, you're very welcome. Brenda, as always, is beside us as well. An easy question, considering you flew in at 5 o'clock this morning.
I did indeed.
And how are you feeling?
Fine.
Awake?
I'm feeling awake right now in your presence.
Thank you.
Lovely adjusting to the time. Yeah. And very lovely to be here. It's my first trip to Ireland.
Well, good morning if you're still in Boston, but good afternoon if you're in Dublin.
It's more or less afternoon by now.
Afternoon.
Yes.
Good, good, good. Okay, let's begin by you explaining to us, what is happiness?
Well, it's a very good question, because happiness is a big suitcase of a word, a big overstuffed suitcase. We mean many different things by it. But for us, looking at the science of happiness, those meanings tend to fall in two buckets. One is, how do you feel? How do you feel day to day? Are you feeling cheerful? Are you feeling joyful? Are you engaged with what you're doing? Are you happy in that way? Your moods, your positive moods, your negative moods, your ups and downs. The other main definition of happiness is more about, do you have a sense of meaning and purpose? Is your life a life well lived? How are you judging it? So they're very similar in some ways, but they're conceptually distinct. And so people in the happiness field will talk about hedonic happiness, and they'll talk about eudaimonic happiness, a word that goes back to Aristotle, of a life well lived.
So do you think we're programmed to be happy?
Well, by program, do you mean that genetically or biologically? You know, in fact, people around the world, when they're asked if they're happy, tend to say they are most of the time. And so if you look across nations, about 6.6 on a scale of 10, people will say, sure, I'm happy enough. But there's vast differences in how happy people are. And there's some notion that perhaps the genes have something to do with it, that each of us might have what's called a hedonic set point, much like a weight set point. That is, that we keep coming back to that same level of happiness no matter what happens to us. So this idea came about when they studied twins. They looked at twins who were identical twins, twins that were fraternal twins, and twins that were raised together versus apart. So twins that were separated right from birth. What they found is there seems to be some genetic component to it. Maybe up to 50% of our happiness quotient comes from that. And William James, the psychologist, said that over a century ago, there are some people who are born with a couple of champagne bottles in their pocket, and there are some people who are born right next to the pain threshold. And so for those near the pain threshold, they may have to work a little harder to get happy. Those with the champagne in their pocket might not have to work hard at all.
Nancy, it's lovely to meet you, first of all, because you are very smiley and you are making me happy in the studio. But if happiness is a science, or you're looking at it as a science,
yes,
without taking happy drugs, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
Can you tweak it to make us all feel a little bit happier?
Absolutely. And so that's what the new science of happiness has really focused on. No matter where your set point may be, and you can tweak it to within a range. And so if mine is a 7 and someone else's is a 4, we can still increase each person's happiness by things that they do. There's now a happiness formula, of course, because we're scientists. So happiness is, H is, the set point contribution, the conditions of your life, some of them, you know, your age, sex, some of them your level of wealth, your family, all of that, and then something called V, voluntary activities. And there's room, about 40% of happiness will come from those voluntary activities.
So let me get this right. Are you saying that 50% of our happiness is actually genetic? It's in the genes. And the rest of it is basically, 40% of it is what we do, whether we're involved in sport, whether we play music, the violin, or we can sing. Would that be too simplified?
It's a bit simplified, but you're on the right track. There is the genetic component, which people argue just how strong it is. There's circumstances of life. Are men happier than women, or different ages, older people or younger people?
People, Nancy, are happy if they're grumpy. You know what I mean?
Well, yes.
They don't necessarily have to be doing a tap dance on the street.
Absolutely
not. They like being grumpy. They like complaining. They like being grouchy. It's part of what makes them tick.
Absolutely. And there are people who are very glad to be unhappy.
Yeah.
And it's really one of their luxuries. It's a consolation.
Sorry, I'm just thinking of somebody we all know very well who has moments like that.
It's a consolation to some people.
Yeah.
And so that's why I said happiness has different meanings. It can be that, are you satisfied with your life? You can be grumpy and satisfied with your life. And I think the genetic component is much more about that day-to-day cheerfulness versus a little more perhaps cynical or worried or melancholy. And that's more where the genes come in. A sense of meaning and purpose can be found in the grumpiest person.
And when you were doing your study, Nancy, I mean, were most of the people you met happy or unhappy, or could they be easily categorized?
Well, I think people often feel a mixture of both. Mm-hmm. I think in general, people feel on the happy side. And then, of course, things may happen that make them feel a little less happy day to day. But I think for the most part, people feel maybe on a 10-point scale, 6 or 7 during the day.
Mm. And in terms of your research, just to go back in the history side of it, and were our ancestors happy? Or were they easier to be pleased than what we are? Because, you know, we're materialistic, we can be.
Yes.
Money,
yes.
There are other factors now that come in. But in terms of the being from the soul,
yes.
Were our ancestors happy?
My guess is they were. As we are to some extent today. But we have different sorts of societal pressures and environmental pressures than they did. One of the big killers of happiness day-to-day is stress. And one of our problems is, paradoxically, we've gotten a lot of the things that we wanted. We've cured many diseases. Children are educated. We live longer. We live in a healthier world. However, we have abundance of resources, and we don't know how to deal with that. So paradoxically, we have a problem of abundance. We have too much food for many people. We have too much leisure time, leads to a lot of health problems, leads to inactivity, leads to too much sugar, too much fat, drug addiction. We have many, many sources of tension. And on the other side, we have less. We have less community. We have more loneliness. We have problems of unemployment. We have problems of an unequal world where some people are enormously wealthy and some people have almost no money at all. And we have the ability now through the internet to know all about the very wealthy, no matter where we are. We have a standard of comparison that's often very hard to reach and sets up a society of unequal people on many fronts.
There are many signs, though, Nancy, aren't there, to show that we are happy. We smile, we laugh, our body language changes.
Yes.
I always love about body language, you know, where two people are sitting beside each other, if the knees are heading in the same direction.
Yes.
I don't know whether that's rubbish or whether it actually means
something. No, there's some very good research on this. Yes.
So there are signs, visible signs.
Oh, absolutely. So the biggest sign that everyone knows about, of course, is a smile. And people have actually looked carefully at the facial muscles to characterize a genuine smile versus that polite smile, that masking smile, the one that we put on in a social occasion. But the genuine smile differs not because the lips are turned up, that muscle is called the zygomatic major, but because of the muscles around the eyes. And when those crinkle, that is the sign of true happiness.
Unless you've had Botox. Yeah. Which is true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's another case study, which we can do. But generally, for those who have not paralyzed those muscles, that is a sign of true enjoyment. And in fact, a 19th century neurologist called those muscles the muscles of joy.
Because, yeah, I mean, as we all get older, we have lines. But there are laughing lines. Yeah,
absolutely.
There are smiling lines.
Absolutely.
Which is a good thing.
It's actually a very good thing. They are the traces of happiness past.
Well, we've loads of people for you to meet later on this program because Brenda has been out and about. Well, you're tuned here to the Mooney Show. We're all talking about happiness.
I could talk to Nancy all day.
We're so happy in the studio. We're all talking when Derek is speaking there. By the way, just to anybody listening that want to tell us what makes you happy, because that's what we're trying to discover on this show, on this particular program here on the Mooney Show. It's what makes them happy. It can be very simple things. And indeed, Brenda, on that particular note, you've been out and about, I believe, in Sligo.
Yes, I was in Sligo yesterday, Marty, and the full reasons as to why I was in Sligo will be revealed completely tomorrow. But before that, all I have to say, it's to do with slimming knickers. That's all I'll say. But I'll tell you more about
Interesting.
That. Yeah, I'll tell you more about that tomorrow. But while I was there, and I knew Nancy was coming on, I took the opportunity to go out and talk to some people out and about and just simply, straight off the bat, what is it makes them happy? Is it Liverpool winning the league? Is it a nice creamy pint of Guinness? You know, what is it that gives them a moment where they go, or is it peace and quiet away from kids, blah, blah. It's probably too much revealing there of myself. But what is the moment that does it for them and makes them happy?
it's just being. It's just, you know, like maybe just being happy within yourself, to be content.
Happiness for me is my boyfriend and lots of retail therapy.
Do they go necessarily hand in hand?
Sometimes they do.
You bring him with you?
I do.
And why does your boyfriend make you happy? What does he do that you go, you know what, I'm happy?
Because he's a real gentleman, he's fun, he's kind and he's generous.
And what's his name?
Michal. Michal, you make me happy.
Happiness is my family. When I am with my kids and my husband, that makes me more happy. And when I talk to my mother at home and my family, that makes me more happy.
And where is home?
India, Bombay.
Sharing a private joke with your husband that nobody else understands.
Happiness would be the health of family and friends. Okay, money won't bring happiness to anyone, but if you know that everyone's okay, you're content and you're pleased with yourself. But if you have health issues or someone around you has health issues, you're not going to be happy, you know. So that's the bar I would set for it, you know.
If you could see what I can't see, the greatest thing.
Not have any issues, not have any worries, not be distressed. Happiness is that, I think. Yesterday, my sister had a baby last week, so I was up to see the newborn baby yesterday, so that made me very, very happy. Gorgeous newborn baby boy, Dunica, £8.1, snuggling up to him on my chest, it was just lovely. That's happiness as well.
Happiness is, to me, when my children don't know I'm looking at them and they're singing away to themselves in the sitting room, playing happily as it can be. That's it.
Happiness is when the weather is cool. If it's warm enough, hot, I don't need to wear a heavy jacket and all that. Now that's cool for me, happy. When the sun is out, I usually step out. People are colorful and people are smiling and more welcoming. So that's the best time to step out.
Have you ever heard of a love song? Have you ever heard of a girl? But I love that pretty geeshy girl where the rippling water flows.
Well, that was lovely, sir. What makes you happy?
Well, it makes me happy is playing the spoons. I like playing the spoons and busting. And I meet such nice people, you know. And it's lovely meeting people and they know me for years. And this is my game now. I'm 80 now. And I'm enjoying the rest of my life. Tommy is my name. Tommy Little. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You'll make me happy when skies are grey. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. So please don't take my sunshine away.
Happiness is putting on a size 10 dress and discovering it fits perfectly.
And has that happened?
No. It will.
And I'm happy, happy, happy.
Happiness is giving happiness. It's making people laugh, bringing a smile.
Do you know what makes me happy is singing. I'm in a barbershop group in Sligo and we have the best crack ever.
I think happiness can be many different things to many different people. Just being satisfied in what you're doing, seeing your kids happy, not having any major worries as such. Minor things can bring such happiness. Happiness to me can be having some time for yourself, maybe getting your hair done, going for a simple walk, seeing other people happy, being happy for their happiness.
Well, they seem to be very happy in Sligo, that's for sure. Particularly Tommy on the spoons.
Oh, he was super, wasn't he?
Nancy, when you hear that in Sligo, and I know you're new to Ireland, yes. and getting used to us, but you can feel the vibe in Brenda's report there that they seem to be happy enough in Sligo, aren't they?
Yes, they do. They seem very happy and happy for the reasons that people are happy all over the world. Relationships, things they feel good about themselves, helping other people, singing, dancing, attitude about just confidence, lots of factors that go into happiness. And there it is. Matter of fact, there's now world happiness surveys, and Ireland always comes out quite high.
Really?
Ireland and the United States are neck and neck.
But do they play spoons in other parts of the world?
Perhaps, but not as effectively.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
not...
yeah. Tommy seemed to be very happy there on the streets
yes,
of Sligo.
Yes, and making others happy.
You know, when you see a newborn baby and they're looking up at their mom or their dad or whatever, eye contact is very important, isn't it?
Yes, eye contact is very important for a baby. And social relations are there from the start. Baby rivets to the face of their caretakers. And from there on, we're always fascinated by other people. We see people in nature, in rock formations, everything. We're always looking for faces.
In clouds, particularly.
In clouds. Yeah. You know, we're always looking for the human form. And we mimic each other's expressions often. Mm. So if you're sitting across from someone and you're getting along, and they smile, if I put little electrodes on your face, we would see your muscles moving. We would see that you're smiling too. If I begin to frown at you, you will yes. frown. And you'll see with babies too, before they even speak, fascinating studies done with very young babies. They were put onto a table and it looked halfway down as though it was a cliff because it was sheer glass halfway. So they watched the little babies crawl along and the mother was at the other side. She either was smiling or she was looking a little concerned. When the mother was smiling, the baby went right over the cliff. When the mother was frowning, the baby just stopped.
Really?
So right from the beginning, that's a stop.
The visual impact.
Yes,
stimuli.
Stop and go. Yeah.
Is it contagious, Nancy? I mean, is happiness contagious? I mean, listening to some of the people there and they're kind of laughing and along with them, that puts me in a good humor. So what I'm trying to say is by me being happier by other people telling a good joke or whatever, how contagious is happiness?
Happiness is very contagious. And all emotions are, but particularly happiness, because once we express it, other people start to feel it, whether it's just because they're mimicking us, because something funny came to mind for them. And there was even a large health study that was done that found that your happiness influences your friend's happiness, your friend's friend's happiness, and your friend's friend's happiness. It goes out to 3 degrees of freedom. So you are making people happy who you don't even know and who you have never seen, because happiness spreads that way in social networks.
But it goes back, I always think, it doesn't hurt to smile or to say hello. I mean, even that, when you get a response of somebody that you might just meet in the street or in
Absolutely.
The corridor at work, and you say, hi, good morning, and you get a positive response, even if you know they might be a bit grumpy.
Exactly, exactly.
It does just have that an effect, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. I mean, we're really reciprocal creatures. And so if you smile at someone and they don't smile back at you, you're feeling, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But I think it gets you out of yourself, too. Mm. And so, for example, in the U.S., a lot of people complain about the commute to work and getting on public transportation or in their car. So we asked some people, a researcher at Harvard was asking people, just get on the bus or the train and smile at someone. Start up a little conversation. And say, oh, it's the last thing I want to do. I want to put my earbuds in. I just want to zone out. But when they did, they found themselves happier.
You know, I'm just recalling at the London Olympics 2 years ago. You know, when you go to London, you're in the tube and everybody has their headphones on.
Yes.
Or they're reading the paper or whatever it is. But when the Olympics was on, I think there was a whole new philosophy.
Yes.
And people said, you know, good morning, and they were smiling, and there was... And it, you could even see it on the tube, on the train, that there was that reciprocal positivity.
Yes.
Well, Nancy, I'll give you an Irish saying. I remember learning this in the Gaeltacht when I was about 12, which is like Irish college.
Uh-huh.
It says, Grian Bert Bohra, which means too short in a road. So the journey is shorter if you engage in a conversation with somebody. That's why if you're going to do exercise, you're jogging or you're running or walking with a companion, you can start to talk about whatever.
Yes.
It shortens the kind of, you know, and the strength and the, how difficult the road is or the hill.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would say if there's one key ingredient to happiness, it's your relationships with other people. Hmm. It really is. It's feeling connected, feeling that it's not just a me, it's a we. It's a we family. It's a we community. It's a sense of belonging. And that is the absolute key to happiness.
Another question for you. Food.
Yes.
Because we all love food, no matter where you are in the world. And sometimes we get too much of it.
Oh, we do.
But does food, can it turn a cranky bear into a beaming bear? Has it a negative vibe?
Ah, well, happiness has traditionally been a source of great pleasure and great social pleasure. But today, you know, sometimes, you know, people will get momentarily happy from food unless they overeat it. And then sometimes they can get a little grumpy or upset with themselves afterwards. But food can make people very convivial. It's a great thing to share and it's one of life's pleasures. So, yes, basic.
Except if you're on a diet. Yeah.
Well, this is the problem. Exactly. In our society, I'm talking about the problem of abundance, is that people don't know when to stop. So you can even look at the brain as it starts to eat chocolate. You take a bite and, oh, yeah, that's good. Take a second bite. Mm. Take the third bite. Take the seventh bite. And you can actually watch as the brain goes from reward to aversion, that we don't know when to stop. And so, yes, chocolate is good, but too much chocolate isn't. And so that's one of the fallacies we have, that if something is good, that if something is good, more of it is better. And that's not necessarily true.
Now, Dr. Nancy Etcoff, you're an expert on happiness. So we're looking at various aspects. But what makes you happy?
Well, what makes me happy are my relationships with people. And you know what? Also being able to help other people, I think, is a true source of happiness. It's become a larger source of happiness as I get older, which is it's so nice to be able to benefit someone else because, you know what? It's not a selfless and part of selfish act. You get to send happiness forward. I also really love to be out in nature. I love to walk by the seaside, be out in the country. I think nature is a huge source of potential happiness that not all people in urban environments get to enjoy. I'm a big dog lover.
Would you really?
Yeah, I love the dogs. I'm a big film buff. So lots and lots of things make me happy.
Nature is important because I watched you. Katrina gave me a link on YouTube about a lecture you gave about 10 years ago.
Yes.
We're talking about people, I think, who weren't feeling that well. They were in hospital and when they were looking out at a brick wall.
Yes.
They stayed longer. But yet if the window was looking out on a landscape, they got out of hospital a lot quicker. They needed less drugs. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. And it was published in Science, a really top-notch journal, and was done in the 1980s. Very simple study that many people now are picking up on, which is, and this was a natural experience. People were assigned rooms. It was just completely random. So some in that particular hospital faced a brick wall. Others looked out on trees. And what they found is the people who were looking out on nature used less pain medication, got out of the hospital earlier, less complaints to the nurses. So it seemed to have a calming effect on people. Where being locked in a room with a brick wall, no sign of nature, made them feel worse.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yes, just it is. Simple, very simple.
Simple little cure like that. I mean, but it is. I mean, when we see nature at its most beautiful, and obviously you will enjoy Ireland for your company.
Yes.
You're here until Sunday.
Until
isn't
Sunday,
it?
Yes.
So you get a chance to breathe in the Irish air.
Oh, yes.
Have you been here before?
Never been here before.
Ah, excellent. Yeah. Well, you'll enjoy it. Okay.
Yes.
Well, look, we've loads of texts coming in, and please keep them coming, 51551. Let me just go to a few here. Two questions for Nancy. Have the scientists noted the great joy and inner peace of people with gospel values? And the second part of the question, if so, why is it so?
With gospel values?
Mm.
And so if I'm interpreting this as general religious
yes.
gospels, and there generally has been research that shows that people who are religious and or spiritual tend to be happier. And I think there are a lot of reasons. One, again, goes back to people and a sense of community. Another is a sense of not being alone, and also a sense of purpose and meaning. I think gospel values give people a sense of that there is a meaningful universe, that it isn't just random and haphazard. It removes some of the doubts. But I think it also gives people strength and gives people a sense of purpose.
Hmm. Okay, well, that's, I think, a pretty good answer. Loads of texts coming in. Happiness is having everything we want. The secret is not to want any more than someone to love, 2 square meals a day, and a warm place to sleep. Anything else is a bonus. Nice words indeed.
Yes.
And keep your text coming in, 51551. We're also going to have, we're going visiting Donegal later on because they're very happy in Donegal, even getting the attention of Oprah Winfrey. And indeed, we're going to Donegal now to the newsroom because Agus Anish, Nuot Le Cuivre Ni Hunkala. It's the Happy Mooney Show on this particular Wednesday, and we're joined in studio, delighted indeed to have her with us, Dr. Nancy Etcoff, who's the Assistant Clinical Professor of Harvard Medical School in Massachusetts, who flew in only this morning.
Indeed.
And we're delighted to have you with us. Loads of texts coming, and keep them coming, by the way, 51551, but just comments and questions, and I'm going to go through them now. What makes me happy? Simple answer, a day doing gardening. Nature keeps coming
back.
Yes,
nature will be a theme.
Yeah. Hi, Marty. Our mom taught us you can't have what you can't afford. Health is wealth. And never expect a reward for anything you do. Then if you get a reward, it's a bonus. Thanks from a very happy camper today. Betty Daly in Malahide. Good afternoon, Betty.
Yes. So gratitude is one of the keys to happiness as well. You know, feeling thankful for what you have rather than focusing on maybe what you don't, thinking about what you give rather than what you get. And so I think that attitude is very important in happiness. And it's really an antidote to two things that plague us. One is envy. Someone else has more. Mm-hmm. The other is entitlement. I should have more. When you feel grateful, when you count your blessings, you are aware of all of the people that have helped you, all the things that you do have, and it gives a different frame of mind.
So say somebody is going down that slippery slope.
Yes.
Where they're starting to get maybe a little bit bitter.
Yes.
Where they're obviously maybe coming under stress, whatever.
Absolutely.
It is, financial. They're looking at other people and they're going above them in the career ladder, or they're, you know, they're not having personal satisfaction and the bitterness is coming in and it's changing them. How do you put the brakes on and say, hang on a second? It's
yes.
very lofty to say, count your blessings.
Yes.
What are the practical things you can do?
Yes. So there are a number of things that people can do, although it's hard. People do get bitter. And I think bitterness is really a dead end because it disempowers you. Mm-hmm. Once you're bitter, you just expect it and you're sure there's more evidence of what I know to be true. And also it pushes other people away. And so you have to first realize that you need to still be open. You still need to have agency to think of what can I do? There's things I can't and there's things that I need help with. What can I do and how can I make myself feel more empowered? And so when we think about that, one of the things we want to think about is the way that positive emotions can short-circuit the negative. So we're all going to have bad feelings about certain things. We're going to be upset, we're going to be angry. But our problem often is, and especially for people who get bitter, is we keep on them for so long. We think about things that happened a long time ago. We think about things that happened today. We think about things that happened to someone else. We think about things that may never happen. We think about things that happen to other people. You know, so our minds are going in that direction. How do we get out of that? How do we get out of that ruminative state, which is going nowhere and doing nothing for us? One way is to bring in the positive emotions. They actually short-circuit the negative. If you try to suppress negative, they're going to get stronger. You can't say, I can't feel that way. You're going to feel that way even more. So take a break. Take a walk in nature. Call a friend. Do something you really enjoy, gardening. Get yourself into a more positive state and then start to think again about what you can do. And it's not easy. And again, some people really enjoy their melancholy, enjoy their bitterness. But I think for the most part, most people don't. Most people really don't. But what happens there is a sense of hopelessness.
I always think that.
A sense of hopelessness, yep.
I always think calling a friend is good because you get so wound up about something you might be upset about. Somebody with a pragmatic brain that you ring, a close confidant or friend is usually good. We have more from Nancy in just a moment. Keep your texts coming. But right now we're going to take a short break. And laughter, of course. You just can't beat laughter. But you're tuning into the Mooney Show here on RT Radio 1. Continuing on our happiness theme.
Yay!
Brenda, you visited a school this morning which claims to be the happiest school in Ireland.
Now, this is a very big claim. And you cannot say this and just expect it to be true. So I went out and I wanted specifics. And I went out to St. Rayfield's National School in Ballyfermot because we got an email in from Mary Hines and she's a teacher there. And she said, greetings from the happiest school in Ireland. So she wanted us to come out and meet her and meet the pupils, etc. So I went out, I talked to her, the principal, and eventually I got real proof from the students. So my question is to everybody listening to the show, to all the teachers in their cars driving home from primary school, is she right? Is Ballyfermot, St. Rayfield School in Ballyfermot, the happiest school in Ireland. Well, you can be the judge of that.
Good morning, Brenda. You're very welcome to St. Rayfield School in Ballyfermot, and we know we are the happiest school in Ireland.
Well, you sound like the happiest principal in Ireland. Sheila O'Carroll, what a pleasure to meet you. Now, that is a huge claim. You better be able to back it up. So you back that up straight away, please.
Absolutely, Brenda. We have no problem doing that. If you want to walk down here with us now, we'll tell you all the great things that are going on in our school.
All right. Well, first of all, just set the school in context for us. Many pupils?
Well, Brenda, we have over 230 pupils on roll at present. We have boys and girls up to first class, and then our boys leave us and they transfer to the school beside us, the De La Salle, and then we've all girls from second to sixth.
Now, it's a big claim, the happiest school in Ireland. Lots of schools up and down the country will say we're fantastic too. We've green flags, they're tap dancing every day, they do fantastic activities. So why are you unique? Sell it to me, Sheila.
Well, I think we're unique, Brenda, in that we celebrate everything from the smallest achievement right up to all the awards we've won. So we have children who come into us every morning to tell us they've won a football match, they've won medals, and I get on that intercom and we read it out. So every day we're celebrating birthdays, football matches, dance awards, and then, of course, right up, we have our Three Green School Awards, we're due our fourth one. We have an Active Schools Award, and we were the first school in Dublin to win the Digital Schools Award, which we're really proud of. And most recently, last week, we were informed that we were shortlisted out of all the primary schools in the country to win the National CARA Inclusion Award.
That's a very interesting award. Tell us about that and why you've been shortlisted.
Well, we applied for it because we're doing a huge amount of work. We have some children with physical disabilities in the school. So we have one little girl, a fabulous little girl, Chloe, who's in a wheelchair, but also we've children who have areas of difficulty with their physical mobility, and also gross motor skills and fine motor skills will be quite poor. And we find that, unfortunately, due to huge waiting lists, these children are often not able to be linked in with services when they need it. As a staff, we felt we needed to upskill ourselves, get our school completely wheelchair accessible in order to support these children. So we do lots of different things. We have Smart Moves programme we started in the school last year, and that is caters for, we look at the younger children, and every day they get a little bit of physical activity and movement, and it's a very strict programme, and that helps support those children. And then we have ramps everywhere, we have a lift installed just to make sure that everybody is included.
Is there any morning you get up, like most of us, and say, God, I don't feel like it today. I'd love a day in bed, I'd love a day off?
No, absolutely not, Brenda. I have started teaching here in 1997, and it was only to be for a year. From the day I stepped inside, I knew this was a really special school. And straight away, there's that sense of community within the school. So no, I never feel like that. The children are absolutely wonderful. Parents are absolutely wonderful, and it's that sense of working together to do what best we can for the children that makes it so successful and such a happy place to work in.
You're selling it to me, all right, Sheila. Let's walk and talk. Are you Mary?
I'm Mary.
You're Mary Hines?
I'm Mary Hines. I'm here, Brenda, for 29 years.
What are you doing?
I'm a teacher here in St. Rayfields.
You're the teacher who emailed the Mooney Show with this huge claim that you're the happiest school in Ireland.
I am indeed.
Why?
And I firmly believe it. Because the day you walk into this school, you become part of the school and you just cannot think about moving away from it. Everybody here is just so happy. Parents are able to walk into the school, no matter how angry they are, they can come in about anything at all and they will be greeted so nicely, and we go out of our way to help everybody who comes to us with any problems.
Yes, Sheila.
I think another sign of how happy we are, I know every school in the country, we have our certain Crow Park or now our Haddington Road hours that we have to fulfil. Our teachers and staff go way beyond that. I'm just thinking of our school musical that went on last week, ran for two nights. We didn't count those hours. The hours spent painting sets, going out, purchasing the outfits for the children, all these things. And we do it simply because we love the school, we love the children, and we know that the parents appreciate every single thing we do. And I think that is key to having a happy school.
Well, we walk down and we'll meet some of the pupils. Mary, what's going on? Is there an Easter egg hunt or something going on?
There is an Easter egg hunt. The junior infant class are doing a literacy Easter egg hunt. They are going with their sheets and they are looking for the Easter eggs that are hidden on the corridor with words on it. So they are collecting the words. So we use very interesting ways of getting the children involved in literacy and numeracy. And we try to keep it as exciting as possible for them so that learning is lots and lots of fun.
We're walking into the Crush Hall now. Why is it called the Crush Hall, Sheila?
At the moment, we are sharing one hall between three schools. So we're quite limited with our time. So it's a nice little bit of a space just underneath the stairs. And it's used as a meeting area when the hall is not available. Probably crush, because it can be a bit of a crush when we're all squashed in there. But again, we're so happy we don't mind, Brenda.
Now, I'll check out what these children really think of the school. And is it the happiest school in Ireland? Hello, everybody.
Hello, Brenda.
Is this the happiest school in Ireland? Can anybody put up their hand and tell me why it's such a happy school? Oh, there's so many people with their hands up. Oh, what'll I do? Hi, what's your name?
Katie Kelly.
And what age are you, Katie?
12.
Why is this the happiest school, Katie?
Because it's very easy to get along with everyone in the school. Like, if you wanted to play with somebody, they'd say yes straight away. They wouldn't say no.
That's good. Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay, anybody else? Let me go down here a little bit. What's your name?
Leah.
Right, tell me, why is this the happiest school?
Because, like, every time I come in school, I get to play with all my friends, and all my friends, they're real nice to me and all. And every time I feel lonely, they let me play with them.
We do the best things in class. Like, we always get going on loads of trips, and we have good things to do in the yard, no matter what. And we get to do fun activities in class.
Do you have a twin?
Yeah.
What's your twin's name?
Alana.
Alana, why do you like the school?
Because for occasions, we get to dress up or we get to do something special.
What about the teachers? Are they not a bit of a pain sometimes? No?
No.
No? What's your name?
Jasmine.
Yeah.
I don't think the teachers are a pain because no matter what, they always do fun things with us and school is always something to look forward to. Like if you get up, you know that you can go to school and just do fun things. Like, it's never dull. The teachers are always nice. It's a very colourful school and there's never the same routine every day. If the teachers were being, like, really boring trying to explain stuff, I wouldn't listen. But they're being exciting trying to explain stuff, so it's easier for us to learn because they're catching our attention.
No matter what week it is, we always have something to look forward to. There's never a day where we don't have anything to look forward to. Because, like, just say, like, we had the school musical last week and this week we have the St. Dominic's trip and we always have loads of things to look forward to.
That's some of the bigger girls there in the school, but we have some of the junior infants, the senior infants and the first class. What's your name?
Ryan.
And what age are you, Ryan?
4.
Do you like school?
Yeah.
And why?
Because I love my teacher so much.
Oh. And what's your teacher's name?
Mrs. Corton.
Is she ever cross?
No.
What does she do with you?
She puts on movies.
Yes. Who's your best friend?
Evan.
Evan. And what's your name?
Evan.
Evan, oh my goodness. And your best friends?
Ryan.
Ryan. And tell me, what do you like about school?
The kitchen. I love cooking. I made that nest. Before you start in the kitchens and we're allowed to eat them when we get home.
That sounds really good fun. And do you have fun in school?
Yes.
What's your name?
Ruby. I love my teacher so much.
Oh, and what's her name?
Miss Curtin.
She sounds like a cool... Oh, look, she's running and hiding. She's so proud of you. Surely she gets cross sometimes.
No.
No?
Probably sometimes.
Do you all know your numbers and your letters?
Yeah, and I can count in Irish.
Go on, do it for me.
Ain't it all a tree, cat, or curic?
I did a round of applause, so well done. That's our junior infants, now moving up to our senior infants. Hi.
My name's Alex.
Alex, and what age are you?
6.
What do you like about the school?
I like about school because our helper Margaret, she gives us biscuits and she puts chocolate spreads on them and they're really yummy.
I'd like her too.
when you win, so a teacher has this book and it's called Student of the Week and Gergar and Shuckton. If you get Student of the Week, you get this badge and it says Student of the Week on it. And if you get Gergar and Shuckton, it's a cert and you can get a pencil or something.
I hope you get one one day.
I did.
What? Did you? Were you Student of the Week?
No.
Not Gaelgor of the Week.
Gaelgor
na Shachtana. Oh, Gaelgor na Shachtana. Well done.
I got four of them.
You got four of them? You must be pretty brainy, are you?
Yeah.
Well, I now have an idea why it's the happiest school in the country. But Chloe Lawler, you're in sixth class. Hiya, Chloe.
Hello, Brenda.
Well, Chloe, big day tomorrow. Tell us everything.
Yes, we have our confirmation tomorrow at 11 o'clock.
And are you all sorted for the dress?
Yes.
Do you want to describe your outfit for me?
Well, I have a wine dress, black lace on the arms, and I have a black waistcoat, and my nanny did it for me, and I have a black bag and black shoes.
Are all the sixth classers very excited about confirmation tomorrow?
Yes!
I presume no homework tonight.
No.
No.
No homework.
Now tell me, you're going to finish with a song. What song are you going to sing?
It's A Star Is Born, and we did it in Zoom, our musical last week. And A Star Is Born, we're going to sing today.
Thank you very much, Chloe, and of course to the teachers and staff, all the mammies and daddies, and most importantly, the pupils here in St. Rayfield's National School in Ballyfermot. Are ye the happiest school in Ireland? All right, we're going to finish with a little song, A Star Is Born. On the count of three, everybody, one, two, three.
Oh, St. Raphael's National School in Ballyfermot, who declared themselves to be the happiest school in Ireland. And when you think of Evan, what's his favourite subject? Cooking in the kitchen, I thought was quite good.
I just love them saying, I love my teacher so much. Yeah. That to me is just gorgeous. Yeah.
You can get the feel that that is a happy school, can't you, Nancy?
Absolutely, absolutely. By what they say, by the tone of voice.
They weren't coached, Nancy. It just came from them.
They didn't sound coached.
No.
It sounded like a truly happy place.
Well, good school indeed. St. Raphael's National School in Ballyfermot. More coming your way very shortly here on The Mooney Show. Loads of texts coming in about our happiness programme here with Dr. Nancy Etcoff. Let me go straight to them. How can you be happy if you suffer from chronic stress, or how can you turn the stress into happiness?
Yes. Well, I think that we all face stress, and some people face greater stress, and certain stresses really mobilize more feelings than others. So unemployment, family issues, health issues, they can all impact on us.
Mm.
So one way to do this is, again, to think about what you can do to feel better about things. Can you more effectively deal with that stress if you give yourself moments of relief from them? Brain breaks, stress breaks. Can you think about what makes you happy? Give yourself time each day, no matter how stressed you are, to do something that you really enjoy. Take a mental break. Also, think about what you can give to others in a positive way that makes a difference. And also, very important, exercise self-compassion. Often we're very critical of ourselves. We want ourselves to do more. And if we thought about it, we would never talk to or think about a friend that way. So be kind to yourself as well.
Be very kind to yourself. We have it on good authority that we have one very happy man in Las Vegas today.
Oh.
He's a man very well known and indeed much loved to our listeners on this program. I'll give you a clue.
To an Ireland we would not recognise today.
It's remarkable to think that 16,000 years ago, Ireland was a frozen land where no humans or animals could live. An incredibly desolate and empty place. So how did Ireland evolve into the green and pleasant land we have today? How did Ireland change from this frozen landscape? We can now tell that story, the story of how our island became Ireland.
Well, many of you will be familiar with the fantastic Secrets of the Irish Landscape. I loved it, I must say. That was broadcast last year on RT1. This three-part television documentary, hosted by our own Derek Mooney, our friend and colleague, following the footsteps of Robert Lloyd Prager, Ireland's greatest naturalist and author of the iconic book, the way that I went. The series examined many little understood aspects of the Irish landscape from the last Ice Age until now, with some intriguing findings. The programme won a major prestigious award in Las Vegas tonight, and or last night, I should say, and it is quite an achievement by the team and, of course, by the presenter. You must be a very happy man today, Derek Mooney.
Marty, I'm absolutely thrilled skinny. However, unlike your guest in the studio there, I am suffering from jet lag, the worst I've ever had in my entire life. I've got bear to go with it. So as Brandon was saying earlier, I'm only happy when I'm grumpy.
You're never grumpy, Derek Mooney.
Marty, I've made a career out of being grumpy. Let me tell you that this is a huge achievement, not just for the team and myself, but it's a fantastic achievement for RTE. For the radio programme, because a lot of our own contributors on Mooney Goes Wild were contributors in an academic sense to the book and to the series, but also for RTE television. Because, you know, when we think of natural history programmes, we always look to the BBC. They're our nearest neighbour. Mm. But let me tell you something. I worked there for a short period. They have a budget of hundreds of millions. Their budget in the BBC Natural History Unit is bigger than RTE's budget, full stop. So they can employ the best people in the world. They can travel all over the world, and they can make the most fantastic programs, and they can spend years doing it. This was one of these rare occasions when RTE, the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, and a very dedicated small team of people at RTE Cork, led by Colm Crowley and the cameraman Barry Dunnan, made a program over a protracted period, a long period of time, and were allowed to do that thanks to funding from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, because you need time and money to make these sorts of programmes. And that's why it won, because you can see the quality in it. And it was judged, but not by Irish people, not by people who knew me or who knew the team or knew anything about the programme, but independent jurors from around the world who looked at this programme and judged it on its own merits for what it was. And they came away and said, you know what, this does not deserve a certificate. This does not deserve a silver medal. This deserves gold. And we're up on the shelf. And let me tell you, we won in the documentary category under science and technology. But those other documentaries, there was a documentary in there about Al-Qaeda. There was a documentary in there about Nelson Mandela. There were documentaries in there about Fukushima. There was a very interesting documentary made about a Japanese company about Japan and how Japan had been affected by 2/3 nuclear disasters. You had Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and then you move forward to Fukushima after that. And the only country in the world to be affected by that, and how, what impact that had. So you can kind of get the idea of the quality of programming that was in there in the documentary category. We took a gold, as did others, but we took it under science and technology. And I think it's important also to note, and I say this because we don't often get the chance to say we've done something really well, and I'm talking about RTE now, on the world stage, but you had entries from all over the world represented there. It was the United Nations of award ceremonies, and it is the best of the best. Now, these aren't celebrity awards, because there's no big red carpet or anything like that. These are awards for program makers and for programs. So they're film and television programs, okay? So you do have a category of entertainment. You do have documentaries. You have corporate. There was an Irish company based out in the United Arab Emirates that won a major corporate award last night for a corporate video they had made. And there was a guy in NBC who got a Lifetime Achievement Award. But after he received his award, and you'd appreciate this one, Marty, he was technical director and is technical director at NBC Sports.
Oh.
Responsible for bringing all of the world's major sporting events into your living room. You work in sports. When we watch a TV program, we see you standing in front of the camera or reporting back on radio, and we think, well done, fantastic, we get the news. But how does it happen? And this guy is responsible for NBC Sports worldwide. He makes it happen. He decides where all the links are going and how many cameras you need, what kind of personnel you need there. And he worked his way up. But it was a fantastic insight into that world to see him get that award. But afterwards, when we were having our photographs taken, an Irish guy came up to me and said, hi, you probably don't remember me. My name is Carl Malone. I studied in Ballyferm at Senior College. I got a job as what they used to call yellow packs at RTE because they had come straight in. It was a weird kind of time years and years ago. And he is working under this guy, and he said he's brilliant. But Irish people are out there in the world of media, everywhere, all over the world. It's only when you attend something like this you see it. There's a conference on here in Las Vegas called NAB, and it is a congregation of the world's media. There are 80,000 people here just for this conference. 160,000 beds in Las Vegas. I'm sure you've been out here, Marty, but 80,000 people here at this conference. And this is why they hold the ceremony here this year. It normally would be held in New York, the New York Festivals Film and Television Awards for the best in the world, but they held it here because all of these people are here. So the place was absolutely thronged last night. So it was a great achievement. I'm very, very, very happy. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have made the programme with Colm Crowley and the team in RTE Cork.
We're very proud of you as well, indeed, Derek, for being part of it. And the series is currently on air in Australia and Canada, isn't it?
And Canada, and I think PBS have taken it over. And in fact, as I understand, it's on DVD in Canada. So it's doing really well, really well internationally, and as a result of last night, it will probably sell further afield now. We don't make enough of these type of programs. Colin Stafford Johnson had a wonderful program on The Secret Life of the Shannon last year, and it was all part of RTE Goes Wild for the month of May, and hopefully we'll do more of those programs. I know the Director General said a couple of weeks ago that there'll be a little surplus. Well, maybe some of the money will come in the direction of natural history. But can I? So it's a great achievement. I'm delighted. Thank you very much. But I'm really interested in your guest. Is she still there?
She is indeed, Derek.
I'm right here.
Can I ask her a question,
Martin? You can, Derek, absolutely.
Hi, how are you? It's Derek here. I was wondering about laughing. Now,
yes.
Emotional tears is what I want to ask you about. When I was travelling over on the plane, I watched a movie called Bad Grandpa, starring Johnny Knoxville.
Uh-huh.
Do you know Johnny Knoxville and Bad Grandpa, the movie?
I know of them. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, you're Jackass. Johnny Knoxville was behind Jackass.
Yes.
Anyway, there's a great scene in the movie where Johnny Knoxville, the whole idea is it's a road trip taking his grandkid, who he doesn't want to be stuck with, back home to his father, who's a down-and-out drunk and all this kind of stuff. And it's outrageously funny and inappropriate all the way through. But there's one scene where Johnny Knoxville, dressed as a granddad, and he's not an old man, but dressed as a really old man with a son, called these two furniture removal guys to the home to take away a bed.
Mm-hmm.
And when the guys arrive at the house, he brings them in, says hello, introduces them to the kid, and they takes him into the bedroom, and he shows them the bed, and his wife is lying dead in the bed.
Oh, my goodness.
And I burst out laughing on the plane, so much so that I started to cry.
Hmm.
Emotional tears were flooding down the side of my face, and the guy beside me kept looking over my shoulder to see what I was looking at. I could not stop laughing. And I read an article some years ago about emotional tears, that they were filled with protein-based hormones that peak when you're very stressed, and that having a good laugh or a good cry is good because it restores the body's natural balance. And I'm just wondering, if that is the reason, why don't we always cry when we laugh?
Yes. Well, there are many different kinds of laughs. There are laughs of just pure joy. And then there are laughs that are more as the one that you described, which is a mix of emotions. And so there's both happiness and sadness in there. There's relief. And there's the arousal. So we have many different kinds of laughs. Laughters can be infectious and totally gay. They can also be really mixed emotions.
Well, Derek Mooney, we're very proud and we're smiling here in the studio over your achievements and the team's achievements in winning gold for Secrets of the Irish Landscape at New York Festival's World TV and Film Awards, which is actually being shown at the moment in Australia and Canada. That's our Derek Mooney. Now, if you go to our website, you will see a happy, very happy little YouTube video set to the song Happy by Pharrell Williams, who you can hear now. I'll be just fine. Yeah. No offense to you, don't waste your time. Here's why. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room with... It's called Donegal is Happy, and it's one of many Is Happy videos that cities have been making all around the world, where local people copy the style of Pharrell Williams' music video by clapping and dancing around in their locality. It's fantastic, Nancy. Paris has been happy, New York has been happy, Dublin, Belfast and Galway have all made happy videos too. Check them out on YouTube. They'll put you in a good mood, I promise you, for the rest of the day. But it was Donegal, yes, Donegal is Happy video that caught the attention of no less than Oprah Winfrey. Denise Blake was one of the film crew who helped make the video, and she's on the line now from Lifford in County Donegal to tell us all about it. Good afternoon, Denise.
Good afternoon, Marty. How are you?
I have seen the video very well, Denise. I've seen the video, and it's a lot of fun. How did it come about?
It came about, Marty, you're talking about Galway is Happy. I posted Galway is Happy on Facebook
And Grace Anne McGarvey happened to be online at the time, and she saw it, and she said, I love this, we should do this. Shane Wallace of Wallace Media, what do you think, we should do Donegal? And within about 20 minutes, this conversation back and forth, we decided, yes, we're doing it. But with us, we don't have a city. All the rest has been Paris, you know, anywhere is a city. We decided we needed to do the county. We needed to make it different. We needed to capture the scenic spots in Donegal. So we put a Facebook page up the very next day, Donegal is happy, and we started to put out locations that we thought would suit Glencombe Kill, Fannet Lighthouse, Malin Head, Balsany Stone Circle, and we put out a call, who would like to dance here? Who would like to take part?
And you got many replies, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah. Well, we got... It was a funny kind of a thing. 10 days later, like literally 10 days later from the first post, we were in Glencombe Kill at 10 o'clock on the Friday morning, and there was nobody there.
Nobody.
So we drove through Glencombe Kill, and we found some people that were walking, six people, and we hijacked them. And we brought them up, and we put them up on picnic tables, and there was three generations of a family, and they danced for us, and they loved it. And I think this was the thing. If we didn't have someone set up in a place, we persuaded people to dance. And immediate, first of all, it was, oh, I can't dance. I don't want to dance. You dance. You'd be good. I'm not going to dance. Where is it going to be? It's going to be on YouTube. Oh, no, I can't do that. But when they actually did dance, they enjoyed it.
They got into it.
It was happy. It really was happy.
So how did Oprah get to hear about Donegal is Happy video?
Well, this is what we don't know. You see, we did the video, and at this stage, we have 142,000 views of it. But Shane Wallace, Wallace Media, he got an email from Oprah Prime's studio to say, Oprah is interviewing Pharrell Williams, and they saw our video, and they loved it. And they're doing a compilation of videos from countries around the world, and there's 115 countries have done it so far, and they wanted to use some of our video in the compilation. And would we give permission? But we don't know how they saw it, or we don't know, you know, we're just going with it.
It's quite an achievement. I mean, you should be very proud of it.
We are over thrilled. We really are thrilled. It, you know, for the people that took part, for the people that arranged, like the Irish dancers, the Zumba dancers, Stagecraft and Bundoran, they arranged to be there. And then for the people that just took the risk and did it, you know, we're thrilled for it. It's... And we've had wonderful responses from people. That it just really, you feel happy. You feel happy when you hear the song again.
We're happy for you, indeed. But of course, you have a beautiful county and you have a beautiful accent, Denise.
Oh, thank you.
So, hey, we're happy to be listening to you on the radio and have you on the program. And well done.
Thank you.
Excellent, Denise. Now, back to Nancy, because I'm loads of texts which I want to give you, a few of them. I'm loving the programme. I've lived my life, still more to go, but I love life and I'm so happy. Happiness to me is being on top of a beautiful mountain in Donegal.
Absolutely.
And taking in the view below or walking the beach with my dog, who really makes me happy. Let me see another one. Happiness is a state of mind. Keep the head up and smile. My husband is contrary and moody. I just laugh at him, says Ed. Another one says here, happiness is a rare moment when you meet an Irish person who actually closes the mouth and opens the ears and doesn't dismiss your words with needless advice. Is that advice by any chance you're giving me at this stage of the programme? Final words in terms of more text. Do you think people confuse instant gratification with actual happiness, Nancy?
They might, and sometimes they do. But actual happiness is about happiness over the long term. It's about things that you can not just enjoy in the moment, but that stay with you. What do we get to keep? We keep our memories. And we want to then have happiness in all that we do as much as we can.
I've had a lot of trouble in my childhood, says the next texter. How can I put this behind me and live for now?
Good question. Is that sometimes things preoccupy us. We can't get them out of our mind. But we realize that there is a future, that future is in part under our control, and that we can think about what we like to do, what our talents and strengths are, how we can use them, and what's meaningful to us. And so I think if we keep those three things in mind, we'll be able to move forward.
Happiness is a byproduct, not an end in itself. Bite on a pencil, says another texter.
Yes.
Make her face smile and you will feel better.
There are actually studies like that.
And Marty, the secret of happiness is very simple. Be content with what you have. So says
Rory
Wilson
wise words.
In Ballinaclash.
All and wise words.